All right, hello friends. Welcome back to another episode of Talk Openly. The little talk show we're doing with Lions Roar Dharma Center in Sacramento. My name's Jack. I am not in Sacramento. I'm in Kingston, Washington, but I'm joined here with my wonderful friend Daniel, who is currently at Lions Roar in the
I'm in the kitchen
kitchen.
and something we're cooking up something in the kitchen here today at
That's
Lion's
right.
Roar.
That's right.
Yep.
How are things going, Daniel? How's the weather down there? I'm coming down there in a few days, and I thought it was gonna be raining.
Ah, it's beautiful. You see, I'm in my I probably can't see it, but I've got like a little bit of a Hawaiian shirt on.
Oh,
I'm in
sweet.
shorts and sandals because it was 68 degrees and sunny when I showed up at the temple a little while ago. But
That's
it's cooling off quickly, and I think when I leave here, I'm going to regret not having a sweatshirt.
Sure. Yeah. Well, 68 and sunny sounds just like a dream. How lovely. Well, actually,
Why? What's it like there?
it's not too, well, it has been raining, but what's cool about where I live is that in the springtime, it's not just like one big block of rain for like months, as I think a lot of people think of this area. The Pacific Northwest is just like rain constantly. It's actually that there's like pockets of rain throughout the day, and then like the clouds will kind of shift and you'll get some sun and some blue sky, and then the rain will come back. It's kind of like Hawaii but cold. And so it's actually quite lovely. I went out to this place called Foul Weather Bluff today. And
Foul, it's actually called Foul Weather
yeah,
Bluff.
FOUL, Foul Weather Bluff. And it was actually, the weather was quite nice. And as I was finishing my meditation, it just started to drizzle a little bit. So I made it in good time.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm glad that you had that experience.
Me too. Well, hey, what's going on with you? Oh, before we check in, I just wanted to let people know what we're talking about tonight in a little bit, just so we can keep you give you a little teaser. So we're going to be talking a little bit. We're just, barely going to be scratching the surface of Buddhist cosmology and like a little bit about what we've learned about the topic and maybe more interestingly, how it can apply to our everyday lives. So I'm excited for this. It's going to be fun.
I think should we offer a fair warning, though, at least from my perspective,
Please.
my understanding of Buddhist cosmology is rudimentary at best and probably flawed, largely flawed. But it is still interesting. I think that, and it does have implications for our practice for sure. So I'm really looking forward to sort of teasing out the ideas and talking about them. But definitely take anything that I say pop with a big grain of salt.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we might have to go into like kind of part two and three and four over the
Oh yeah.
next couple months or something. So,
Yeah, without a
yeah.
doubt. Yeah. I'm excited about the topic though. So yeah, looking forward to get into it. But for as far as like checking in on practice levels and whatnot, I'm really, really happy the last week since we last talked, we were talking about Sangha a lot, right? 2 weeks in a row. And over the course of the last week, I've had a lot of good Sangha practice. And like there's been a number of instances, and they've all been quite rewarding. One of them was it was actually last Thursday. I had a lot of, there was something that had provoked some anxiety in me, and I don't, I used to have a lot of anxiety, like a lot, like day in and day out, kind of chronic all the time, anxiety. And I hadn't felt it for a long time, and then all of a sudden something kind of provoked it, and I was like, oh my God, look at that, there it is. It's been a minute since since you've been here, right? Hello, friend. And so it was kind of neat. I was like, all right, well, I really want to like sit with this, meditate with this. But in the morning, things were gonna like I wasn't gonna be able to meditate at home in the morning. And so I thought, well, I'm just gonna go over to the temple, right? And I'll meditate there. at thinking to myself, I wasn't even thinking what day of the week it was or anything. But on Thursday morning, I show up at the temple, and Thursday morning, our friend Connor
That's
is
right.
sitting here at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, the lights were all on, the incense was burning, it was warm, and there
Wow.
was Connor. And I was like, oh my God, like, what a delight, right? Like, and it was so cool. It was a wonderful meditation, and I got to talk to him at length. And it just, like, when I left, I was like, just much lighter, much, much lighter. It was such a great experience. Yeah. And
That's
there,
lovely. What a little
yeah,
surprise.
it was a surprise. It shouldn't have been. I've joined him on Thursday mornings before. I just wasn't, that's not what I was thinking about. I thought I
Yeah.
was going to be like by myself in the dark or whatever, but no, it was all warm and very welcoming, and such a joy, and I, like I was saying, I've had multiple opportunities this week to practice, both meditation and just working with hand in hand with Sangha members, and thoroughly enjoying that experience,
Yeah.
like the rock tumbler feels very inviting.
Nice. Isn't that nice? Like
Yeah.
you have a rock tumbler that like is actually quite lovely.
Yeah, it is. It's a good one. It's a good one.
I was wondering, did you come away with anything about like your anxiety or what kind of happened?
I know exactly what I it was very clear what it was all about. It was related to my livelihood, which I,
Yeah.
and some stuff related to my pending or current ongoing bankruptcy case,
Right.
and like something had happened that I wasn't anticipating, and I was like, oh God, oh God, oh God. Like, okay, there was nothing bad actually happened, right? Like nothing actually happened. It's just my mind got disturbed.
Yeah.
And so, but it was really neat actually to watch one of the things what was helpful. I'm glad you asked that question. So first I recognized like, oh, right, impermanence, right? And I'm attached to some things that are impermanent, some concepts, some ideas about work and livelihood and companies and whatever. And none of that's true. There is, it's all like none of that's real, right? In any sort of real sense, right? And
Yeah.
it's bound to change and bound to, at some point be separated. And so there was this sort of like, there was an acknowledgement of that. But you know what was truly helpful, Jack? This is, I don't know how to explain it, but that exchanging self and other thing, right? Or equalizing self and other, rather. That's such a powerful practice, because when I felt that strong anxiety and I recognized what was at the source of it, I remembered, like, oh, right. Actually, right now, there are millions,
Yeah.
millions of other people who are feeling this exact same way for very similar reasons,
Right.
right? And then this notion where I was like, you know what? I got this. Let that ripen on me. Come on.
Yeah.
That's fine. Let's do it. I'll take it, right? And that it was a really profound shift. I feel like that actually, by really sitting with that equalization, that was the thing that just like took the wind right out of the anxiety sails.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
It's a beautiful
Beautiful.
practice.
And isn't it incredible how something like that, momentous, that in any other case we would take it as like a very negative event, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like really intense, like financial stress and all the things. And to turn that into blossoming of
Yeah.
wisdom, that like oh, like that's even more like the lotus just kind of opening up. And
Yeah.
how beautiful to apply the Dharma in those situations where that can become a gift.
That's right. Exactly that. That the nature of our suffering is such that, that really if we can be mindful and if we apply, what we've learned, then there the The stuff it really works, right? And the
It
suffering
does.
is in fact decreased. And what was beautiful about that particular day, so it was a Thursday, and I that afternoon, or like that day actually, I was going up to, we're having a retreat this coming weekend, and I'd gone up to work with our friend Ellen, who's kind of leading the, taking care of the setup and everything. And I worked, hand in hand with her and other people in like getting things prepared. And it was such a beautiful, easygoing, enjoyable day, like work day, and it, like, I don't think I would have enjoyed it nearly as much if I hadn't sat a little bit with what was plaguing me in the morning.
Totally. It would have been kind of haunting
Yeah,
what you were doing.
exactly.
Nice work, Daniel. That's awesome.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, it's good stuff. I really appreciate our sangha, and I, oh my God, I'm so grateful to live in a situation where I have the pleasure of learning Dharma.
Gosh, me too. Yeah, immensely.
How's it going with you?
It's going okay. I took a vacation week this week because I'm also on spring break for school, and I'm gonna be leaving my job in June, so I've got all this time off that I gotta use. And so I was like, okay, this is a good week to do it, and then go down and do the retreat this weekend. And I can't quite tell, like I've been noticing this kind of like depression just kind of knocking a little bit, and I actually find that that comes up when I take breaks. So it's like there's this way that I can kind of put it off when I'm busy, and so this little lingering actually really kind of beautiful thing that depression can be sometimes has been just bubbling up a little bit. And part of that is because I've been doing my nice spring break reading has been this New Yorker collection of articles from the New Yorker magazine on climate change over the last like 20 years. And it's so interesting because like I can sense how I've been kind of putting off learning more about what's happening because I think it feels like almost too big and sad to encounter, but I felt like this is something that I've known of almost my whole life and it's important to me. I want to learn a little more about the details, and it's been hurting like a lot. I've been feeling a lot of grief from it. And today I was on Facebook and saw this posting on like the Orca Network or whatever, this group that I follow. And it was a few pictures of this baby orca that had lived for a couple of years but died last year because there's not enough salmon population and the oceans are too crowded, with these huge boats. And my heart just like broke. Like I was so sad today and just like really grieving these creatures' lives and feeling kind of responsible too, right? And so what I did to kind of listen to this part of my spirit that was, hurting, and I actually took my Tara sadhana out to Foul Weather Bluff I told you about. And I did some prayers for the orcas and did Tara practice for the orcas, and it felt like something that was actually, it's interesting because like I come from a political activism kind of background, and so there was this part of me that was like, you need to go out and like do something, like action, take action. But I actually feel like this was a really profound way to work with my sorrow and to hopefully provide something, to the world to help, change what's happening or, whatever can be done with that kind of energy being put out there. So, Lama told me recently that I need to do a lot of Tara practice. And I think that's what, what is going to be really important for me because, yeah, I think it's just going to only get harder in some ways, right? With like climate change, and I'm also going to have work where I'm, seeing people suffering, and I need to have Tara. Like that is, it was very clear to me today, like how much I needed Tara there. And sure enough, like she arrived, like during my sit, I was just, it was beautiful. It was like going through the, there's like the glance meditation on the stages of the path. So it kind of like takes you through the Lam Rim really quick. And then this kind of visualization of Tara and purification of body, speech, and mind. And then reading all the different, like the 21 Taras and all of her qualities. And it was like, I remembered that, like, oh yeah, I can do this, like I don't have to just like fall into a hole and like die, like hope that I die quickly, like I can be here, I can do it, so yeah, it felt like kind of a big day. I'm
Isn't that, yeah,
was that.
I can imagine so. I know what you're talking about with regard to the climate change. You know,
Yeah.
there is this every now and then, like I do my best to sort of shield myself from it, right? And to just like, don't think about that, don't think about that, don't think about that, right? Like and then something will break through. And
Yeah.
I'm like, all
Yeah.
right. Like I've been sort of like my ignorance has been somewhat blissful, right? In the sense
Yeah.
that like I because it like if I actually open my eyes and my heart to it, it does. It has this painful, incredibly painful component to it. And I
Yeah.
think what's so beautiful about what you were talking about is that it really actually sort of strikes at this notion of a middle way. Right. So like on my end, I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna, bury my head in the sand and pretend like it's not happening. And then every now and then my head gets ripped out and I see it and it's and it hurts, right?
Yeah.
But that actually by first sort of like really being present with it, like really present with your own feelings and like your participation in it and all of that, like really being with that. Is on the it sort of like synchronizes you with the problem itself, like it actually like links you up to it and
Yeah.
makes it like very close and very personal. And I think that the Tara practice, if you think about it, she's oftentimes known as the protector of travelers. And we're traveling, this climate change is going to be we're journeying through a massive shift in the way that humans and other beings that live on this planet are going to experience life, right? And there's going to be a ma we know that we are in a massive shift, right? There's extinctions going on, there's geopolitical changes, there's war, there's all of this stuff that is signifying great massive changes for the planet and the people on it.
Yeah.
And so that journey that we are here for, it's good to have someone who's got your back.
Yeah. For
Right?
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I love that combination. It is this it what I heard, what I got this sense was to pull out of the ignorance, open up our hearts and our minds towards it, and then we can see what we can do. Of course,
Yeah.
it's beyond any single human being. At
Yeah.
least that's the way it feels to me, right? But that doesn't mean that we don't have a role. And maybe our role isn't about saving the orcas or the polar bears or any of that. Maybe it is about trying to alleviate the suffering during that transition,
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That yeah, re really resonated with me, and it's kind of like a balm to my heart. And yeah, I mean, I think it, I keep just getting reminded over and over and over again about renunciation, right? And Lama's term is definite emergence, right? Where it's like if I keep trying to like put all of my eggs in the, let's, make a better political world. Like it's gonna keep failing me,
Yeah,
right? It's
yeah.
only gonna keep failing me. And not that we shouldn't try to make things better, absolutely, 100%, we need to do that. But that really, I'm recognizing so much that like No, we gotta change our minds. We really have to change our minds, and we have to recognize, our inseparability from one another. Otherwise, there's gonna be some form of how we keep repeating, the same mistakes, the same mishaps.
And I think it actually is, even though we may not be able to affect massive, huge changes in such a way that it becomes exactly the way that we wish it were, little tiny, what appears to be insignificant things have sometimes massive repercussions, right? Or rip this ripple effect. And I really truly believe that what we're up to, the work that we're doing has this incredible powerful ripple effect. I saw this video the other day that I had no idea about, but basically, in if you have wavy water, right, sort of turbulent water, just a like a drop of oil, just like a drop of it will calm those waters, right?
Whoa.
And so I was watching this science experiment. It turned out like it's something that's been known to sailors for a long, long time. And there's these stories of them being caught in storms and like just dropping a barrel of leaking oil into the water and
Yeah.
then having that like calm the water around them, right?
Wow.
And I was reminded like that's sort of what I how I envision like what we're doing here, right? Like maybe we won't be able to calm the whole ocean, right? But the effect of our like our practice, our effort can have this ripple effect, right?
Yeah.
And what you're saying is true. Like we that what we really need is a change of mind, because we can help ourselves and we can help the world at large, right? Like we may not be able to undo all the damage, just like we can't undo our karma, right? Like we're going to have to experience the effect of whatever our karma is, but we can stop making it worse and we can work together to make it better.
For sure. Thanks. And what said about ripple effect, I was thinking about that today. I was sitting on this beach, and every once in a while someone would walk by. There was also a family with kids that walked by, and I was there. I had like a little setup with, this cushion and my tara practice and my mandala. So I was just thinking, like maybe someone has that made a little impression, or even just planting a seed that like someone might be interested in, like, someone's meditating on the beach. Why would someone do that? Go look it up. And so it's those little things, that I think can be really powerful. I know for myself, when I was a kid, just seeing like an image of a Buddha on this, there was this new Buddhist temple in Ventura, and I drove by it like on my way to school every day, and it was just like, what is that? That's so like bizarre to me, but it really stuck with me, right? And so there's little things like that that I think can have a very profound impact. So maybe
Well,
even us just sitting, just
you
sitting.
never know, you never know, right? But definitely we can witness that ripple effect in our own lives. And one thing that's very clear is that we can't actually see the ripples sometimes, right? They go beyond our vision. And so I'm oftentimes surprised by, like hearing from somebody later that there's something that I did or something that somebody else did that was minor that had these massive shifts. So yeah, there's hope, and I appreciate your practice. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah,
May
thanks.
the orcas be well.
Yes. May they be well. May they thrive. May we all thrive. Well, this is all right. I mean, I think we're kind of touching on some cosmology stuff already, so I know we're going to have plenty to talk about, but maybe we should do a quick lojong. What do you think?
Yeah, well, let's see how quick it is. I don't know.
That's
Depends on which one we get.
right. Yeah, sometimes they're a little bit more, they're kind of like something you got to chew on.
Exactly. Well, so here I'm going to hit the button on the RLSG.
Okay, let's see. Oh, great. We've been talking about this
Okay.
already. So, number 16, immediately join whatever you meet with meditation. Nice work, Daniel. You did it. So let's see. So this slogan refers to the practice of transforming adverse circumstances and situations into the path of awakening. It is a reminder not to respond to things in a habitual way, but rather to respond with understanding, openness, and courage by maintaining a sense of awareness. We shouldn't think of meditation as something we only do if we're sitting on a cushion, but should treat everyday situations as meditations by focusing our mind on whatever arises. There's nothing we can't utilize for our own and others' benefit if we use both fortunate and unfortunate circumstances to train the mind. Thank you, Charlotte Cabgon.
That's fantastic. And that's exactly what we were talking about earlier and talk about quite frequently is ex exactly that. I can't remember the exact reading at the meditation tonight. It was by Pema Chodron, but she touched on this point as well, where, in it's not an there's no need to transform anything. That the transformation can come with the awareness. So by doing this, by joining whatever we meet with meditation, by being with it, by not running away on our thoughts and habitual reactions, but to notice, and that's one of the great things about suffering, about any type of pain, is that we can use it as this sort of like, oh, wait. Okay, I'm suffering. Let me be with them. Let me feel it. What's that like? What is this present thing like? And then as we sit with it, it can begin to sort of like reveal itself, right? And loosen up. So I like that we've talked about the peacock and the poison, right, before. And this is on the same point, right? Is that there's this way of taking what appears to be something negative, something bad, and witnessing it transform into something that's healing and helpful.
For sure. Yeah, and it's like you were saying, with your experience today, like just how kind of how much we can get out of really engaging rather than running away from it, or kind of like what Charlotte Kepion is saying here is just kind of going our tendency, right? Our habitual tendency, which for me, mine is to kind of like I will wallow, like I'll really like I'll just stay in the sadness, like that's kind of what happens with me, and then it gets like to real depression where I like can't move, right? And so yeah, to instead like choose to bring that awareness, like oh wait, this is an experience I'm having, and also it doesn't mean that it's like permanent. There's this kind of permanence that I do with my depression where it's like oh this is the way it actually is,
And always has been.
and always has been. So yeah, that's what I love about this training is that we're not training to comfort. That was something that Lama talked about a couple weeks ago in his talk that really stuck with me. Where he was saying how a lot of, American mindfulness is about training to comfort, which is a good thing, right? We like in some ways, right? We have to learn to relax because we live in such a high, like stress, like keyed up environment. And so, yeah, we want to relax. We want to learn to chill out. But that actually in this practice, in this training, what Lojong is teaching us to do is that we meet that like intensity rather than just kind of training to like be calm and relaxed. We're saying I can greet this experience in all that it is, and also see it for what it is that it's a temporary phenomenon, and I can watch that shift. So it's really fascinating.
There's nothing comfortable about watching baby orcas die, right? Or
No.
knowing that, species are going extinct, or that there's massive suffering, happening as a result of climate change, right? There's nothing comfortable about that, but what you were saying earlier, and what we can point to here is that seeing it for what it is, being with it, not doing what I'm was saying is my tendency, which is to just sort of like turn away and apply some ignorance to it, right? Instead of doing that, that's my habitual tendency, is to allow that feeling, allow that, just sit with it, right? Not to necessarily like stay with that depression for a long period of time, but feel what it is. Like when you see the way things actually are, you know, it can hurt. Okay, feel that pain. That's not comfortable, but okay, it's there. Be with it.
Yep, for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, and I think yeah, really allowing ourselves to see too, like the nature of samsara when, you know, when
Right.
we're met with something that is, you know, these unfortunate circumstances or these, you know, really challenging situations where it's like, okay, yeah, this is the result of minds that are totally out of control and, you know,
Yeah.
do not recognize the way that reality actually is. And so, do I want to get out of this? Do I want other people to get out of this? Okay. Like, let me learn. Let me learn from this.
The thought that sometimes occurs when I catch myself thinking like that is like, what else did you expect in this,
Yes.
right? Like,
Yes.
what did you think was going to happen, right?
Yep. For sure. For
Yeah.
sure. Well, great one. Thanks, number 16.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that. I appreciate the randomness of it.
I know. Yeah, it worked out tonight. Well, Daniel, we've already kind of been touching a little bit on Buddhist cosmology and you know, in this discussion on climate change, I think it's really interesting because, you know, and we'll dive into it a little bit more, but these kind of big picture, like world events, universe events, and kind of like the chronology of like Buddhist time, this is a really short period, right? Like we're especially, you know, our lifetimes are just like a blip
Just a
right?
blip.
On like a scale of like a kalpa or something like that. And so when I'm talking about like applying Buddhist cosmology in my everyday life, sometimes I use that kind of approach where I'm like, okay, take a breath. You know, like this is just one small like moment in time. And there's a lot more that I'm going to need to engage with. So that's a little bit of the daily application. But yeah, I'm curious, you know, we have talked about the topic of time before. What has kind of brought you to want to explore the cosmology piece a little bit more.
Well, so I find that the time and space aspect of the Buddhist cosmology is it has sort of these two effects on me and my practice that are incredibly helpful. So one of them is that time, exactly what you just described with the time thing, right? Where when I can sort of like, right, like it's not about this right here, right now, right? Like that's it. There's a relationship. There's a dynamic relationship between this being that I am right now, this person, this human being, and the entirety of all everything, right? Including kalpas, right? Many, like trillion, we're not talking like tens of thousands of years. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands. We're not talking about millions or even billions of years. We're talking about time scales where a trillion years is like a blink of an eye,
Yeah.
right? And so that feeling, like it makes it super, super, super expansive. And it like, it kind of, it's relaxing in a way, right? When you think about it, so it's like, it can be, you know, it can be distracting, it can be all kinds of things, but it can be kind of like, right, okay, yeah, like it's going to be okay in the sense that this whatever is happening right now, even just the time geologic timeline of the Earth is nothing in sort of the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And then there's this, you know, this feeling of well, okay, there is that, but then what's this relationship? What's
Yeah.
my okay, that's nice, but that can
Exactly
sort of, that can be that jives with my sort of nihilistic tendencies, right? Like,
right.
yeah, oh, it doesn't really matter, you know,
Right,
that kind
right.
of feeling, but it does matter very, very much, right? Because within this, there's the idea of the continuity of consciousness and karma, right? And that when we get into one of the key aspects besides time about Buddhist cosmology are these realms, right? And we've talked about the realms before, but the realms that we're familiar with within our teachings are let's do them real quick. So
Hell
there's
realms.
what there's the
Start
hell
out with hell
realms.
realm.
So yeah, there's the three lower and the three
Yeah.
higher realms, right? So six realms total, each one of it which can be divided into tons of others. So like
Yeah.
categories and subcategories and so on and so forth. But hell realm,
I know you got me excited. I was ready to list them.
do it. And then within hell realm, there's hot and cold realms, and there's
Yeah, they're both bad.
And you know what's disturbing? If you read the descriptions about the different levels of the hot and cold hells, is that when it comes to time in these hells, so it's not permanent, right? So unlike
No.
like the Christian hell or whatever, it's not like a forever and ever and ever.
Right.
Like it's just an experience. It's a period of time, but the time will feel like a long, long,
Oh,
long.
boo.
Long time. It isn't permanent. It's not forever, but it
Yeah.
will it feels long. And so
Brutal.
thankfully I don't remember my last foray into the various hells, but
Yeah, no. Hopefully
I
not have to
guess
go back there.
yeah, I don't want to go back there unless maybe
No.
hopefully to help people get out of it, maybe.
Yeah, yes.
So we have the hell realms, then we have the hungry
Hungry
ghosts,
goats.
right? And
Yeah.
oh my God, okay, so within these realms, there's both the notion of them like no, really, we're actually talking about real like realms, like actual beings in these hells and in these hungry ghost forms and so on and so forth. Like there's also though a psychological component, right? There's this or
Right.
this component that is should and could affect our practice, because what we recognize is that every single day we walk through those realms. We occupy,
Right, yeah.
right?
Well,
Our mind state, right?
yep. And what drives people into the hell realms is anger, right? Like that's
That's the big one.
yeah, anger, intense anger. And then for the hungry ghost realms, it's greed, right?
Greed, envy, jealousy. Yeah. And that's what, dude, okay, so I kid you not, I was reflecting on my own hungry ghost nature. So I don't know that I have a tremendous amount of hell being in me, or you know what I mean? Like I don't occupy hell a lot in my daily life sometimes, but not a lot, not for very long. But my God, I am a hungry
Me too.
ghost. You know, I gotta, you know, like, so I was laughing about it because I complain physically. I'm sort of an apple body, right? And I got this sort of, I've always had this like big belly, right? And I'm like, I was thinking about it today. I was like, damn it, Daniel, that's because you're a hungry ghost, right? Like, you're always like, look at you, man. Like, you can never be satisfied, right? Like, you keep wanting and wanting and wanting more, 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 right? And never satisfied. So I like that's how it can be effective, right? To think about it, like, okay, do I want to, when I'm no longer in this form, when I pass, what do I want my next incarnation to be? Do I want it to be an incarnation that is nothing but that feeling of dissatisfaction and unquenchable thirst
All the time.
all the time? Do I want that? No, I don't want that. So maybe, just maybe, I should let go of some of my greed and some of my jealousy right now, right now,
Right now. Yes.
while I have that opportunity. And that's okay. So those are two of the lower realms,
Yeah.
hungry ghosts and
Animals.
animals,
That's next.
yeah,
Animal.
animal,
Yeah.
right.
And animal, what gets you into the animal realm?
So I think that within the animal realm, it's like I think it's primarily the result of ignorance.
Yeah. Yes. Which
Yeah.
is I think there's probably like some debate within like the Buddhist community around like animals being like intelligent or not. Like I think animals are super intelligent. But I wouldn't necessarily want to be an animal, right? Like I wouldn't
Oh,
want to be in
totally.
the
But
animal realm. But I do
yeah.
think that they're really intelligent. I don't think that they're ignorant. So it's kind of like I'm uncomfortable with using the word ignorant for animals, but I also understand like, okay, but it's really hard to kind of change, Like you can't change your situation if you're an animal. Like whereas like humans, we can like we can learn, we can, change our minds. We do all kinds of random things to change our situations. Whereas animals like can't really like they're in that mode.
They're kind of locked into their habit patterns and don't can't just sometimes you're like, dog, like, okay, so when I was working up at the Lotus View Ranch on Thursday, there were these turkeys, right? And it was mating season, so apparently the males quit eating and they get really like stupid. Apparently, already classified as dumb birds, but they get even more dumb, right? And there were these three males that were just making a ruckus, and the people who lived there were like, yeah. So two of the males they had crossed over a fence and gotten to the other side of the fence. It's not a big fence, it's not a difficult fence or anything. And these turkeys, males had gotten to the other side of it, and then they couldn't figure out how to get back. And so they were making all this noise, and then another male came over because he wanted to fight them. And so he jumps over the fence to fight them and then fights them. And then they turn around. They're like, oh, none of us can get over the fence. And they just sit there making a bunch of noise because they can't figure out how to get back over the fence,
Oh,
right?
buddies.
Yeah. But that's the kind of, and the funny thing is like, okay, so even if we don't want to use the word ignorance necessarily or to classify animals as ignorant, that's another one of I regularly occupy that ignorant animalistic.
Oh, totally.
Like where I'm just like, it's just habit and just conditioning. Because think about how animals are just so much conditioning, right? And just like they're just like whatever their genetics sort of dictate, whatever the environment dictates, right? Like that's what's gonna happen.
Like my cat, like he totally can't control himself. Like there's no way that if he like saw a bird or a mouse outside that he wouldn't go run after it. Like he doesn't have the mindset to be able to say like, I don't want to kill. Like I'm trying to, I'm trying not to kill anymore. Like he's just like, that's what I do. I'm going for it,
Exactly.
It's just instinct. Yeah, it's all instinct.
Right. And so, like, again, like we recognize though that in ourselves, we're no different from that. We are somewhat animalistic in nature oftentimes. And so, good question. Do we want to continue with that? Is that if I were to die right now and be reincarnated as some kind of an animal, first, and even within the animal realm, that's one of the ones that we can see, we can witness, right? We can't necessarily see the hell beings or whatever, right? But we can see animals. And we can see that there are animals who live in great comfort and ease and everything, but they're still animals, right? And then there's animals that are, raised in awful conditions and being exploited by humans and all of that, right? And so, but regardless, I as much as I love the idea of being a hummingbird or something like that, what if I'm incarnated as a hummingbird in your backyard with, your cat? Like, right?
And I'm sure like it the way I think of it is that like maybe it'd be kind of cool for like a day, like try it out for like a day, see what it's like, but to have to live a whole lifetime like just having to fight the elements, not knowing where your next meal is coming, unless you're a dog or a cat who's fortunate, that's a stressful life. That's a very stressful life.
Okay, so those are the three, that hell, hungry ghosts, and animals. Those are the three lower realms. And then there's the higher
And
realms,
then
including our
us,
us, our
humans are next.
right?
And humans, you get well, it's really hard to get into the human realm, from what I've heard. But what also kind of like keeps us cycling in human realm is attachment, right? Attachment this leads to us having to just work all the time. Like we just gotta work all the time. Like that is our life, is just like constant work. And whether it be like, working for a wage or just like the work that we have to do to maintain our bodies, like we have to eat, we have to wash our bodies, all of those things, it's just like constant toil, I think is the term that's used in the Chinrezig
Say
Sadhana.
that again.
Just constant toil.
Constant toil.
That's the human realm.
When describing, so even though realms and Buddha fields are different, this field that this realm is in, for lack of a better word, is sometimes called a saha. And it's the world to be endured.
The world to be endured. Oh,
Yeah, so
interesting.
it's an endurance thing. Right? You gotta just keep toiling away at it.
And apparently it's also the best realm to be in if you want to, really learn the
But
Dharma.
why? Why is it the best realm?
Well, I think maybe we could talk about the Deva realm or the demigod and the Deva realms
Yep, go
first,
for it.
and then
Yeah,
come back
yeah,
to it. Yeah,
yeah.
so the demigods are like, they're kind of like how would you describe them? They're like semi gods. Like they have got like powers and whatnot. But they're always fighting one another. They're like really jealous and just kind of conniving. And I kind of think when I do the Chinrezig Sadhana and I'm imagining doing Om Mani Padme Hum for this realm, for the Deva realm, oftentimes I'll imagine like Wall Street broker. Like that's kind of like the kind of earth equivalent that I, see where it's like they're not like the ultra, ultra, ultra wealthy, but they are very wealthy and they're constantly having to fight one another to maintain
And fighting,
wealth.
and because they're demigods, they're a little lower than the gods.
Exactly.
They're not just fighting each other, they're fighting the gods as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no hope for them to win.
Yeah, for
And it's
sure.
funny, I love the fact that you use the Wall Street metaphor because if you look at the wheel of life, right, that depicts these different realms, what's funny is that there's usually within the Asura realm, there's a tree, right? That tree, the roots and like the lower part of the tree are in this Asura demigod realm, but the top of the tree where the fruit is in the god realm.
Oh, brutal. Yeah, so they're like fighting for this fruit that they can't even access.
They can't
Yeah.
have it because the gods are going to eat it all up.
Dang, that's wild. And I like this note here about the Deva's existence is marked by struggle and competition, reflecting the results of good karma, right? They're in an upper realm, but it's tainted by aggression or envy. So really having to be mindful of like, when we're doing kind of positive actions, also like what is our motivation behind that? And so yeah, very interesting. Deva realm.
The gods.
Gods. Which is like when I first learned about the Devas, I was like, why wouldn't I want to be there?
That sounds great. Let's go. Come
It kind of
on.
sounds like what I originally thought Nirvana was like or something, where it's just like
Totally.
happy pleasure all the time. Like I
Oh,
get everything I want, like don't have to work for it.
you're
Like
beautiful. Everything around you is beautiful.
right. Yeah. And you're just showered with it just
And
like for
you live a
millions of
long time.
years.
Oh yeah, m millions of years.
And what gets you into the oh the Deva realm is pride, right? So that's kind of there's good karma, but it's also tainted with pride. And so seeing oneself as like better than others and really like emphasizing our good qualities all the time. I have to be careful of this one because I can have a lot of pride sometimes. But
Well,
ooh, go ahead.
I can't imagine you as a god, so, but not in any negative way.
No. Don't pump me up. But so the scary thing about being in the Deva realm is that you are still within an impermanent existence. So that means that after your good karma has run out, after millions or even billions of years, within a moment, and it's gonna feel like a moment, right? Because it's like I think it was like a human long week is when they start to notice like, oh, I'm losing my existence. And so then it goes like that because they've lived billions of
But
years.
during that last little part when they are on their way out, one of the things that's kind of funny about it or interesting is that they begin to stink. like really bad.
Oh,
And all of the other gods don't want anything to do with them because they're
yeah.
gross.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
That's terrible. You don't want to be a deva.
No,
Work
it's
on your
important to
pride.
do Chenrezig practice for them as well.
Yes,
Yeah.
because that's a lot of
That's
suffering.
awful.
Yeah.
And to
So
know, that you might very well be dropping down into like a hungry ghost or a hell realm,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news.
Yeah.
So why do we want to be born in the human realm then? Like this kind of like blah. Like it seems like kind of blah and just like hard work, constant toil, as Chenrezig Sadhana would put it. Why do we want to be here? Why get
Shoot,
reborn here?
Jack. I don't know. No. I get, my understanding and so far my experience is that it's a nice blend. It's a nice blend of pleasure and pain, right? That it's not too bad. So like one of the things that that we're this particular existence, this human existence is quite special. Ours is anyway, right? Because we have fortunate circumstances and have met the Dharma and we have our teacher, right? And so that means that we get to practice. And just like we started at the outset, and just like the Lojong slogan is indicating, that we have this is a good place to mature and to develop, right? And that we have where if we look at the if we use the lotus analogy or the lotus metaphor rather, then we recognize that there's enough, there's the human realm has plenty of really, really nutritious shit for us to grow on, right? And so like we recognize sometimes that's what we identify. We're like, oh, it's so crappy, right? Like it's always all manure, right? Oh, terrible. But no, that's good, right? Because we're lotuses and we want to draw that in, right? Like we actually want to use that. We want to like allow that to help us in our spiritual growth. And so that's one of the fortunate things here for us is that not just within the human realm, but within this, whoever we're talking to, whoever's listening to this, right? You're fortunate enough, right, to have you have enough of the circumstances to be able to practice and to grow spiritually.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the other realms like are either, too much suffering or too much pleasure.
Yeah.
Where, it feels kind of obvious that like when you're like burning or like extremely cold or, your whole life is surrounded around, finding your next meal, that like it's going to be really hard to pay attention, to any kind of teachings. And of course, there's ways out of those realms. And so it does happen, but it's really hard. And then in the upper realms, there's so much like luxury that it's like, why would you even think that you need to escape that?
Right.
Like you're just,
Right.
everything's being taken care of and it's wonderful and it's ecstatic. Like why leave that? And so yeah, it's like the human realm is it's kind of just frustratingly normal. Where it's like,
Right, right.
okay, we can maybe like Rinpoche's talk, cool boredom. Like we can kind of approach it that way, that it's like, okay, and this human realm that we're in right now, like is also like pretty chaotic. So not that we're, not gonna have a lot to engage in, but we can kind of we have enough stability, and yet enough to push us
That's
to learn.
right. It's in if you think about the realms, it's in the middle, right? And so it's more of the that middle path, right? Like it's not too extreme either way. And so even the extremes of human existence are not that extreme, right? Yeah.
I mean, I definitely it is interesting when I do Chenrezig practice, I'm usually thinking about humans,
Of
like
course. Yeah, I know.
human
Yeah.
versions of those, 'cause I do,
Yeah.
we see those kind of like different layers of wealth and access to resources and like how much more difficult or easy that makes living.
Yeah.
But then how much more, difficult like someone like Donald Trump, it like he can't learn the Dharma the way that he's living his life right
He's like an
now.
animal.
Yeah, like yeah, it's really it. So we could look at humans, different humans in these kind of symbolic ways as well. But
There's one thing that we didn't touch on, and we won't be able to go into it super deeply, but one of the aspects of all of this is this notion, of the continuity of consciousness, right? That there's a relationship, and that we, that there's essentially that we get reincarnated, right? And that these experiences, I brought my mala beads just because I heard this great use of the mala beads, that each one of the beads is essentially like a life, right? So there's this life, and then there's a next one, and there's a next one, and each one is a distinct bead, but there is this sort of thread that sort of weaves together, right? And that the karma sort of passes along that. And I like to think sometimes, like, even though I don't have any recollection of past lives, I do like to think that moving forward, even though I don't know what type of being this might be coming down the line, the next bead on the mala, right? I have no idea. I hope very that it's a good existence, a favorable existence, but I don't know that person. And what's really interesting to me is how, because I don't know that person, and yet that person is me in some sense, right? And there's some shared something there. I realize that actually that same notion of wanting the goodness for that being, it extends to all be it's all beings, right? Like everybody, because then it really breaks down the barriers for me when I begin to think about reincarnation and how it's not personal, right? It doesn't mean like me, Daniel, my forever soul is going to be reincarnated as, another Daniel that, no, not that, right? Another being, sure, absolutely. But look at all these other beings already here, right now with me, right?
And that we're all, contributing to one another's different causes and conditions,
That's right. And even we might even be contributing to the causes and conditions for favorable existences for orca whales.
Yes, most definitely. I believe
Yes. Yes.
that. Well, there's so much more to talk about on this
Ugh.
subject. Maybe we can dive into it again. I had this whole kind of like I was looking into the Satta Surya Sutta, which is like in it the Buddha like predicts the heat death of the universe. Like there's like all this cool stuff. It's like really amazing. So maybe sometime we can check it out. And
Send me a
basically,
link to it. Send me a
I
link
will,
to it.
yeah. And really what it comes down to is that all phenomena are impermanent and unreliable. Take refuge.
Yes. Yes. Oh,
Like,
thank you, Jack. That's perfect. Thank you for putting it on that.
Well, friends, this has been really wonderful. I appreciate everybody who comes to listen. If you're able to, please make a donation to Lions Roar Dharma Center. Help us keep the lights on, keep these programs going, and we look forward to next week.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah.